Bar.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to the This and That podcast, show number 77.
Woo!
And that's a woo because I forgot to check the show number before we started the show, and Gretchen was like, what show is this? Or I said, what show is this? And she said, I don't know, 77?
No, it's always 72, so.
Oh, that's right.
We've
you first
been on
said 72.
For a while, so.
Well, this is show 77. And we're going to do something a little bit different for you today, partially because I've had a very stressful week at work. And just, you know, I was actually dumped by a girl 3 weeks ago, no, 2.5 weeks ago now. And I have a couple observations I wanted to talk to about that. Because it was about a 5-month relationship I thought was really, really good. And kind of came pretty fast. So it is interesting, though, because the first week I was pretty miserable. Second week I had my miserable moments and my good moments. And this week, I'm not out of the woods, don't get me wrong, but it's almost like a logarithmic function of goodness every week. And I've been dumped before, but this time I'm just kind of very carefully watching from a scientific standpoint.
Your emotions? Are you going to graph them in? Because we know how much you like graphs.
I feel like graphing my utility or something. So for those out there lonely hearted, take good heedance. Time is the great healer. It really does do its magic. And a little bit of journaling helps too.
So you think
being
about
introspective and so forth. But what I wanted to say about that was Gretchen has been like, we should do a show. And I'm like, oh, I'm not in the mood.
So we're going to do the show and he's still not in the mood.
Well, no,
now
I'm in the mood. I just haven't had a chance to process all the events that have been going on because I've been sort of in my own little world, right?
Yeah.
But what's funny about that is just a couple of days ago, I saw something about Michael Jackson. And I realized, look at me. I'm wallowing. I'm wallowing. Well, I wasn't that so much, but I'm wallowing in my own little, you know, little world of self-improvement and thoughts and actualization and things like that. And one of my favorites passed away. And, you know, I didn't really grieve. Not that you grieve a pop star, but I didn't really have time to process it. And I finally processed it on Tuesday. And I'm sad, you know?
Yeah.
I really, really enjoyed his music. And I kind of grew up with him. He was, what, a couple, 3 years older than I was. So I grew up with the Jackson 5. I had Jackson 5 records from a cardboard box, the cereal boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it, you know? I still like the Jackson 5.
Did you watch the memorial?
No, you know, I was at work. I wanted to Hulu a little bit, but just never got around to it. But I did see some excerpts, and it looked very nice for the most part.
It was
very
tasteful.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Did you catch it on Hulu or what?
Highlights, no, I watched the highlights in the evening. You know, it was 2 hours. They cut it down to 1 hour.
Yeah.
Showed the highlights. And
That would be worthwhile.
Mm-hmm. It was very moving and very touching. And
really?
Put together in 3 days. So
yeah, I know,
did a
really.
Pretty nice job.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I heard his little daughter made a very touching speech.
Right.
But then they're kind of putting that down in the morning radio show the next morning saying, well, you know, it was very hard. I mean, everybody thought it was great. Heart-wrenching, but it's like, really? Does a 4-year-old girl really need to speak at
11.
Her 11-year-old?
Mm, oh, 12. She's 12.
12. 12. Wow, really that old?
Yeah. She's the oldest.
Oh, well, does a 12-year-old even? Does a child have to speak at her parents' funeral, period, and then such a public one?
Right. I don't think it was planned. I've heard it was completely spontaneous. So, yeah, they didn't think she was going to talk.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so the nature of the show, I didn't prepare anything. It's going to be just sort of Gretchen's topic. So this is the Gretchen show, and I'm going to be the commenter. I'm going to be the color commentator.
Oh, all right.
But
you
I'll be
color.
Back. And
you
I'm already color. Getting back. Yeah.
Oh.
So
what do you think about the theory about it takes half the time? You think you'll be good as new in half the time?
Yeah, I really
Two
do.
2.5 months?
Yeah, I really do.
Thinks it takes that long.
That's what it says. I think here's my observation of this particular one. That it was a little bit deeper at the beginning, but I just have this sense that the duration won't be that bad.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is positive steps that I have been taking very actively. I think last time I was dumped 4 or 5 years ago like this, I wallowed a lot. So I'm not letting myself wallow too much. I'm actively taking steps to proceed.
All right, women, don't let him fool you. He's out there partying.
Well, you know, it's been, I tell you what, I have had, for somebody being broken up, I've had a lot of fun. But I truly am very, very thankful to my friends, including you, who have just rallied around me and taken me out and made me happy. And, you know, really, really pays to have very good close friends, and they really come out when you're down.
Yeah.
You know?
They do.
So Gretchen was nice enough to accompany me to my friend's Indian wedding banquet. They got married in India and had all the ceremonies over there, but they came here to have a little reception. And I think you could probably tell that was like a week after, and I think you could probably tell I wasn't the best of company, but it was nice that you came along with me. It really did help a lot.
No, that's fine. Well, that's what our friends are for.
I know.
Yep.
That cue the Stevie Wonder song.
Oh God. Oh.
So, anyways, yeah, life is good. I'm starting to see that sunshine.
Oh, that's great.
So I know. I know.
Yeah, that's great.
Can't keep the Jeff out of Jeff.
Certainly sucks to get dumped, but...
Well, you know, yeah. Of course it does. Yeah. And everybody has been.
Mm-hmm. So I think everybody can relate.
Everybody can kind of relate.
Everybody has some kind of feelings.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And then you sort of start to hear about these stories of, you know, divorce and really groundbreaking, foundation shattering of your life.
Right.
I didn't have that.
I mean, people have been together like 18 or 20 years, and they got four kids, and oh my Lord, how hard that has to be.
That's a life changer.
That is a life changer.
This one was very disappointing, not a life changer, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, got it. The perspective does help.
Right. Right. Well, speaking of Michael Jackson,
yes.
You know, there's certainly been a lot of rumors around, and I don't want to spread any rumors, but I read a really fascinating article about him, and I just wanted to tell you the highlights, because I totally believe this is true, because this is a man. He was a Pepsi official back in 1986,
mm-hmm.
And if you recall, this is right about the time in 84, Pepsi sponsored the Jackson's reunion tour. The Victory Tour was enormously successful, and then right about that time is when Michael's hair caught on fire doing the Pepsi commercial.
That was the Pepsi thing, right?
Right. And so then he was going to do a tour for the Bad album. And at the same time, he sent Pepsi a draft of the complaint that he was going to file in L.A. Superior Court. So to avoid a lawsuit, Pepsi donated $1.5 million to the Michael Jackson Burn Center at Mount Sinai Hospital.
Huh.
So Pepsi decided that since he was willing to continue working with them, they would send a representative out to his home to try do the deal for the Bad tour.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the man who wrote this article. And it's been 23 years since he did this. But this is just a glimpse into Michael's life then. Now, this was before Neverland. But what's really interesting about this article is how unusual his life was even then.
Wow.
So this is this normal Pepsi executive
who
flies on a private Pepsi jet with Frank DeLeo, who's in all over the news right now as Michael's manager or agent, and John Branca, who's the guy who got the control of the estate. He's the attorney in control of the estate.
Okay.
So both of these guys were on the jet. They land. They're picked up by limos. There was no negotiation. It was basically $10 million to sponsor the tour, and if Pepsi wasn't going to do it, Coke was ready to sign. That was it.
Wow.
So that was, they presented the demands and they signed the contract on the plane.
Yeah.
So it was all done. They landed, and so the limos pick them up, and they go to the family home in Encino, which has been all over the news now because that's where everybody's, you know, staked out. That's where they live. They bought it. The Jacksons, Catherine and Joe, bought it in, I think, 73. It's been in the family a really long time.
Yeah.
So Catherine was frying smelt when they walked in, and they went through the kitchen, right? And so then they meet Michael, who was dressed in a starch white shirt and jeans. He greeted us and led us into the dining room. He had had the most unusual skin this man had ever seen. Now, this was 23 years ago. He said it was translucent. He didn't shave even though he was in his 20s. His hair was long, sparkling, and perfectly coiffed. So he sat down. They talked. He didn't say anything except he said, oh, here comes dinner. And when dinner came, this paragraph just will blow your mind, all right? Wrapped from head to toe in gauze, a silent young woman carried to the table small teacups and a large urn through which she poured us yogurt tea. Michael explained in his whisper voice that dinner would be one of his favorites, yogurt tea and cookies made without sugar.
Oh, my God.
She was dressed like a mummy.
Wow.
She was dressed like a mummy and served them yogurt tea.
Wow.
Yogurt for dinner.
He was a very young eccentric.
That was the dinner. Okay. So then after dinner, the talk turned to the tour plans, and then Michael was a little friendlier, and Michael made a joke about he was going to set the world on fire. And he pointed to his head, and that was kind of funny. That's so then funny. Michael asked after dinner if anybody wanted to go and watch TV. So this guy, so the other two guys begged off because apparently they'd been there before and knew the drill. So this Pepsi exec says, okay. So they go to Michael's bedroom, and it's an enormous room with 18 mannequins of multiple colors in various stages of undress. And suspected that Michael spoke to them and played with them. In the middle of the room was a floor-to-ceiling cage housing Bubbles, the three-year-old chimp, which, by the way, Bubbles has been all over the news now. He's 26, and he lives in Florida in a wildlife sanctuary because he's too strong, and Michael had to give him up.
Did he give a speech at the funeral?
No, I don't think Bubbles was there. Okay, Bubbles was not invited. So they all sat down on the couch, including Bubbles, and watched an hour and a half silent movie of a John Wayne Western. And then Michael said, do you want to tour the rest of the house? I mean, this just, he couldn't have made this up. This is why this has to be true, right?
Wow.
So he says, do you want to tour the rest of the house? And the guy goes, yeah, okay. So Bubbles goes back in his cage, and they walk into the next room, and there's a Diana Ross shrine.
Oh, my God.
It had white brick walls. Every inch of the room was covered with photos of Diana Ross from her earliest years in the Supremes. On the shelves, the tables, and the floor were hundreds of candles that Michael kept burning 24/7 to honor his friend.
Oh, my God.
It gets better.
Oh, my God.
It gets better. I just think this is just absolutely amazing. And the man only didn't want to say any of this, but now it seems it's kind of appropriate because this was all before any of the big scandal happened. This was when he was still a fairly attractive man.
Right.
I mean,
he
would see him out with Bubbles, and here's this little bulldog. So then they walked into the dance studio, and it had an elaborate sound system. It looked exactly like a dance studio, the ballerina bars, the shiny floor, but there were no mirrors. So you're a dancer with no mirrors, which is really pretty wild. And Michael explained that he didn't like to watch himself dance. So then they went down the back staircase into the garage, and it had the cleanest floor this man had ever seen. There were 12 cars of every imaginable luxury model, from Mercedes to Ferraris. They were all white convertibles. Huh. They asked him which one he drove, and he pointed to the little VW rabbit in the corner.
Really?
And then they went into the theater in his house, and this is in mother's house. They had a 10-foot candy counter stocked with every type of candy and Michael Jackson trading cards, in which this guy said, could I take some to my kids? And Michael said, of course. And then they went outside to the zoo. And this was in Encino, in the parents' house. There were zebras and giraffes filled with all kinds of gentle animals, except for one llama who would bite and spit.
Wow. I heard about Michael Jackson and the llama.
Isn't that wild? So then they went away. They said goodbye. He never saw him again. But a few days later, they had the contracts. And within 2 weeks, there were autographed photos for the children and tickets to his show at Madison Square Garden.
Well, that was
people
nice.
Have always said that he's very thoughtful and very kind.
Yeah,
But what eccentric behavior. Can you imagine?
And you wonder at that age, what were his influences for the eccentricness?
Well, Diana Ross was, you know, they credit Motown did something fancy to say that Diana Ross presented them because she was such a big star. So a lot of the flyers, the early flyers, said Diana Ross presents
the Jackson 5. But that was all marketing stuff.
That was marketing. She really didn't discover them.
No.
So Barry Gordy actually heard them perform and thought Michael was pretty outstanding. So it was just he's always loved her from this, you know, start. And I mean, she was named Guardian in the will.
But
is
she kind of eccentric?
I don't know. I think she has many children of her own, and she lives in Switzerland, doesn't she?
I don't know.
So, anyhow, I just thought that was really interesting, and I don't think that's one of the rumors. I think that's actual fact from this man who worked for Pepsi and actually got to meet him through business arrangements.
So he said he had weird skin back then. You think he had started treatments, or you think that was just really have a skin problem?
Maybe this is the skin disease. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it was interesting to say that it was translucent.
I know.
Even 23 years ago.
Yeah.
It was translucent.
Yeah.
But not white, but it was translucent.
Huh.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe he did. So we were going to do this around the 4th of July. So
yes,
I just
we
wanted to mention that there's wonderful fireworks in Addison and Kaboomtown.
Yes.
They rank among the top 10 fire displays in the United States. And
really?
I got to tell you, I was so disappointed. I mean,
I can't believe it. They're in the top 10. I've never been to Kaboomtown because it just seems so crowded.
It's just awful. I've got to tell you. I don't know, but... Oh, so there was this article about people making fireworks, and the most popular firework is still the happy face, but more shapes like stars, fishes, hearts, and cubes are becoming prevalent.
Really?
Yes, and it's the hardest thing possible to get letters to show up in the sky.
Okay.
So letters are really challenging. So a lot has happened since our last little podcast in mid-May.
I know. A lot has.
We had all these celebrity deaths.
A lot of them.
Yeah. Besides Michael, there was, you know, Farrah Fawcett, who died on the same day.
And I did read a little bit more about Farrah. Again, I kind of tuned it out for a while, but I read a little bit more about her, Texan connections.
Yeah.
And she sounds like a pretty interesting person who was very pretty, was recognized for that early in her career.
Right.
But wanted to do other things, wanted to become an actor. I mean,
Or an artist,
yeah.
Right.
And sounds like a really decent person, too. So
her documentary about her last couple years was amazing.
That's what I heard.
It was really moving.
Yeah.
And she was doing it to really publicize the lack of some research money for certain types of cancer.
Yeah.
And she would get letters from people who said, oh, you're my inspiration. Please keep trying. I mean, because she had the resources to go to Germany and try treatments that weren't allowed here.
Right.
And she went back to Germany like 3 or 4 or 5 times and stayed months on end to try to get these more aggressive treatment. Well, I'm not sure if they were necessarily more aggressive, but they were different than what the U.S. allowed.
Yeah.
So she had a team of doctors there and a team at UCLA because she had the resources. And I think people were thinking that maybe this would lead to more of a breakthrough for other people who had it.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty much a terminal thing.
I mean,
so that was a shame that she sort of got overlooked, and then Ed McMahon died the same week, and Carl Malden.
He definitely got overlooked, but then, you know, Ed McMahon. What's Ed McMahon? I don't know. Hey, yo! Hey,
all right, now we know how Jeff feels about Ed McMahon.
Well, I just was never that impressed with Ed McMahon. I mean,
What do you think about Steve McNair?
Steve McNair. Well, it sounds like it's a murder-suicide. It was planned. She bought the gun 2 days ago.
And she was the mistress, afraid he was having an affair with another mistress.
Is that what happened?
Isn't that just amazing? He's married and lives in Florida, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And here he was in Tennessee, and she was his mistress in Tennessee, and afraid he was screwing around with somebody else.
Yeah.
That's a real bummer to have your mistress shoot you. I can imagine the wife, but to have the mistress do it? Holy shit. Oh my God.
I guess when you're Steve McNair and you're a good looking guy and all the Super Bowl the career and everything, I guess you can get whatever you want, but why just make a commitment to these women if you want to live that kind of lifestyle? That's what I don't get.
Exactly.
I don't get that.
You know, like, basically it was a double life, wasn't it?
I guess it was. I really haven't delved into it too much, but yeah, I suppose so.
Wow. And when John and Kate broke up, since you haven't been with us for the past couple of weeks, you're probably going to say, who are John and Kate?
Are they the reality couple that had the 7 kids or something?
The 8 kids.
John and Kate plus 8.
Yeah, they're now gone their separate ways.
So are they still filming the show?
The show's on hiatus. No, it's on hiatus. Okay. They got to get their lives back together. You know?
So was it revealing within the show? Did you see sort of how this led up to the divorce at all?
I never really watched it. Yeah, I maybe watched one episode once they were all the tabloid. I mean, every single tabloid out there and every, you know, magazine like People and Us were predicting it. I mean, it was showing up until, you know, they had pictures of him with his mistress and she was getting cozy with the bodyguard. I mean, they were definitely in the public eye.
Yeah.
That's for sure. She took a 2-week vacation with the kids by herself.
Oh.
You know? Well, over
Father's Day? Was it a popular show for years, or did it become popular when they started tension and all that stuff?
Yep. Because it's on TLC or something that not a ton of people watch.
Yeah.
So it got some really high ratings, especially the show where they had this big announcement, which was they're going to get divorced.
Okay. Yeah, because watching a show, I mean, just the idea of a reality show with a couple with 8 kids.
Right.
I mean, I wouldn't tune in. There's really no reason to there, you know?
Right. Hey, but what about Mark Sanford? He was in this time period that between our last podcast and this podcast.
So lucky, didn't he?
What, that he's not going to get censured?
Oh, I don't know.
He got censured, but he's not getting kicked out.
I just thought he was lucky by the fact that Michael Jackson died the day after he came back and took... I like the Jon Stewart take on that, though. He goes like, man, this guy got so lucky, Michael Jackson died. And then the next thing he did showed Mark Sanford doing interviews like with all these people. And he's like, shut up.
I know, exactly. Just be quiet and stop.
What's a matter with you?
Stop revealing more.
And he kept revealing more like, this wasn't just an affair. This was an affair of the heart. Shut up.
Right. And I had more than one.
Yeah.
There were other women. Yeah. Like, be quiet, for God's sake.
What's the matter with you?
And isn't it interesting that the pot calls the kettle black when he was the one who was the loudest critic of Bill
Clinton?
He was the one who said Bill Clinton needed to be impeached immediately for getting a blowjob in the White House.
Right.
And look at him. He took off, left the state in turmoil. What if that serial killer who was on the loose now in South Carolina just got caught? What if that had happened while he was out of town screwing around in Argentina?
Right.
Or if there had been a natural disaster. What would have happened?
Exactly.
It would have been his ass. But because nothing happened, he's still going to hang in there.
So what does censured mean again? You're put on sort of
I think you get your hands
probation.
Slapped. Yeah. I think they pass a formal motion.
Oh, it's a formal motion.
It's a formal motion by the legislature that says you were bad.
Like Bill Clinton was censured, I think. Censured, wasn't he?
Censured. Oh, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yep. So that happened, and let's see. Oh, and Sarah Palin resigned.
That's a big deal.
$500,000 in legal fees and $2 million of state taxpayer money looking into ethics violations.
So this is good. Gretchen's keeping me updated on all the news that I've been ignoring.
Jeff, he's been in his own cocoon, he's poking his head out now.
I'm poking my head out. But so has there anything been revealed about the Sarah Palin thing?
She's a fighter, not a quitter, and this is how she's going to fight.
What is she fighting exactly?
I don't know. She's fighting. I don't know. I've listened to her, and she talks in circles, and it's like, I'm an intelligent person, and I don't know what the hell you're doing. She's not going to bow out of government, but she just can't. She can't proceed as is because it's not fair to the people of Alaska.
For what reason?
Well, because of this $2 million in she's just become such a lightning rod, and everything she does is under the microscope, so she's really saying she can't govern the state, and so, but everybody's saying she's going to have the book, go on the book tour, get major bucks for the speaking tour. A lot of people theorize she'll come down to the lower 48 and make friends.
That's not a bad idea. I mean, she probably has a lot of money to be made on the tour.
Oh, yeah.
Whether
she
runs
it.
For politics or not, it's probably just because she's still popular in those eyes. I can't believe it would be a good thing for the Republicans to really run her. She seems like a lightweight.
She's incredibly popular
to a certain set.
Yeah, the conservative Republicans, 78% of them favor her, even after this, even after she did this. So if you're a conservative Republican, you still feel have good fuzzy vibes towards her, which is mind-boggling to me. A person who doesn't know that Africa is a continent is just...
Just doesn't seem like we want to go back to George W. kind of, not the smartest.
Yeah, not
person.
The smartest. Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know.
Well,
But I guess $500,000 in legal debts, you probably have to do something.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Iran had some elections also.
Yes, they did.
Did you notice those?
I did notice the elections, yeah.
Ahmadinejad is still president. In case you were worried. He still retains his title.
Yay, I voted for him.
Okay.
I absenteed.
With Twitter. You Twittered him.
I Twittered, yeah. He's on my Twitter list.
So remember a while ago, you talked about the tropical dream job with the 35,000 people competing for it?
Right.
Yes. Well, they picked a winner.
Oh, they did?
They did, and he's a lucky Brit named Ben Southall. And he has begun his term as best job in the world. He has a 6-month contract to serve as caretaker of the Australian island. He's 34 years old. He beat 35,000 candidates.
Wow.
He gets to swim, explore, and relax on Hamilton Island in the Great Barrier Reef while writing a blog to promote it.
Nice.
All that for $120,000.
Nice. What sort of allowed him to win?
Uh-huh. He's going to be more an ambassador than a caretaker.
Yeah.
He has a really full itinerary. He's going to fly to different parts of the reef. He's going to explore, write about it, and then try to sell it to the rest of the world. He was selected after 15 finalists spent 4 days on the island for extended interviews.
Okay.
They had to snorkel.
Yep.
Gorge themselves at a beachside barbecue. And relax at a spa.
What about scuba diving? I would think that would be a big deal.
Right.
There.
Then they had to demonstrate blogging abilities, swimming tests, and sit through interviews.
Huh.
Yep.
Well, that makes sense.
Right. So this campaign has brought tons of publicity to Queensland.
Yeah,
it's generated millions of dollars. It's become a viral marketing hit. And so he's got, a really nice, cushy job cut out for him. We should look him up.
We should
check out his blog and see how it's going.
Well, that is very cool.
Yeah, isn't that cool? Because I know you wanted to apply for it. You would have been good at it.
I wanted to apply for it.
You would have been really good. There was a woman in Dallas who made it to one of the last
rounds. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yep.
Yeah.
So there you go. Hey, so what's the deadliest day on the road for car crashes? What day do you not want to be out there?
For some reason, I want to say Friday.
No, I'm talking about holidays.
Holidays.
Friday is an holiday.
July 4th?
That is it.
Well, I just said that because, you know, July 4th is past us and I figured you're reading new news.
I'm reading
news.
Material.
Not that I'm so smart. Why July 4th? People get firecrackers in their gas tanks? Or?
Nearly 51% of all deadly traffic crashes on July 4th are alcohol related.
Really?
Yeah.
It's that much of an alcohol weekend.
It is. It's a party weekend. Isn't that amazing?
I don't know why that surprises
followed me. Followed by New Year's Day, which a lot of people would have said. Maybe the intuition is that some people do stay off the road on New Year's because they know that there's a lot of people drinking
and
driving.
At least we understand
but
that that's a
fourth,
drinking driving one.
Maybe you don't quite understand it, so that's why you're out there.
That's interesting.
Isn't
is it like generally the July 4th weekend, or is it any particular
day? No,
it's that one day.
Uh-huh. Whereas on New Year's, they look over 3 days, but on July 4th, they're just looking at the one day. So it's July 4th, New Year's Day, Labor Day, of all things.
Wow.
Memorial Day, Thanksgiving, and Christmas.
Just any reason that you're not working.
here comes Labor Day, Jeff. Let's go
party. Woohoo!
Weekends are more dangerous than weekdays. More people die while driving in the rain. And the most dangerous months are December, January, and February for car fatalities.
Why is that? Do they know?
I think probably has weather, probably weather related.
Probably weather.
Because most parts,
most
parts of the country, it's not great weather.
Right. Slippery. And
yeah. And the most dangerous time during the week is midnight to 3 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. Makes sense.
And more than half the crashes occur at speeds 55 or over.
Makes sense again.
These are the deadly crashes I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So they all make sense. Yeah.
Well, very, very interesting.
Yeah. Hey, so we have some cool anniversaries that you may or may not have heard about.
No, I don't think I have.
Okay.
Let's see.
All right. Okay, what has...
You can make me guess.
59 black and white stripes and is 35 years old.
Some zoo animal?
No, think inanimate object.
39 black and white stripes.
59.
That makes all the difference.
Yeah, doesn't it? 59 black and white stripes. It was an invention 35 years ago to speed up grocery checkout lines.
Oh, the barcode.
The barcode. Happy birthday, barcode.
Happy birthday, barcode. Yay.
It's 35 years old. Isn't that amazing, though?
When
you think about it, do you remember the first time you ever saw one? Because
there
was a lot of people were scared of them.
Yes, they were.
Remember?
Big Brother and all
Big
that.
Big Brother, that's what it was. But the first one was scanned on June 26, 1974. It was originally designed to speed up checkout lines and give supermarkets a new tool to track their stock. Now they're used on everything from airline tickets to diabetes calibrations to handheld video games or even designed around barcodes.
Yeah, I even have a barcode application on my iPhone.
Yeah,
I'm not
you
quite,
can check it.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what
that.
It's used for yet.
Right.
I haven't really delved into
if
it, but it
check
can...
It.
Okay.
If you want to scan on it and you can see what company it is, you can do that with your application.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that cool?
Yes, it is cool.
Right. So 10 billion times a day.
Oh, look at that. They got the iPhone right there.
Barcodes are scanned, yeah.
Huh.
And 35 years, they're both mundane and yet absolutely necessary. They're cheap, they were needed, and they're reliable. That's why they were successful. They were designed at IBM. Now they're being rivaled by RFID, which is radio frequency identification, which are little tags. However, an RFID tag costs about 5 cents, whereas a barcode costs half a cent. And so that's why there's been a lot of resistance to RFID tags. Walmart was demanding all their suppliers to put them on, and there's been a lot of pushback. And everybody was saying no. But the barcode is actually called a universal product code. It has 30 black and 29 white lines. It conveys 12 bits of data in binary code. It gives nothing more than an address to look up information in a database. IBM and its developers did not patent it. Isn't that amazing? They did not patent it. But manufacturers pay a minimal annual fee to a nonprofit group to cover administrative costs. I just thought that was pretty cool. In some ways, it's a charming, archaic icon. And when it first came out, like we said, a lot of people were suspicious that Big Brother was going to get all kinds of information and it was going to be a surveillance device.
Yeah.
So, but now it seems very innocuous, doesn't it?
Yeah. You know, I went to a bar last night.
Speaking of bars.
Val Piano or something like that. It's a new Italian eatery in Mockingbird Station.
Uh-huh.
There's a happy hour there. Anyways, they've got a system where they hand you a plastic, like, credit card type thing at the beginning.
Uh-huh.
And you order your drinks, and the waitress takes your little card and then scans it. And then you check out with it. At the
oh, how cool.
Yeah. So
that's neat.
It's kind of convenient,
well,
really.
Were you surprised by the bill?
No. No? No. I mean, because things are on happy hour special, so we knew the prices, you know.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. I guess that's, I don't know what kind of technology that is, credit card scanning technology.
Wow.
But anyway, not really barcoding.
I bet there was a barcode on it.
Well, there may have been. It's like a credit card, though. Yeah. I don't think credit cards have, they're magnetic stripes.
Yeah,
there's
magnetic
strips.
Yeah, which has the same kind of thing as the barcode.
Same kind of information, yeah.
And also coming up in the next month, we got two big anniversaries, and I'm sure we both remember them.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, 40 years ago. 40 years ago on July 20th. That was 1969. Do you remember what you were doing? We're all going to remember this.
Was that the moon landing?
That was the moon landing.
Wow.
The Eagle has landed. Houston, yes. The Eagle has landed. Apollo 11.
Neil Armstrong.
Yep. Yep.
This is one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Yep. Right. And
yeah, I remember where I was in. I was in elementary school,
yeah,
and we were all
where
watching
you were.
It.
The little black and white TV?
Yep.
Yeah, it was a big deal.
It was a big deal.
So July 20th, 1969, I know the Smithsonian's doing something to celebrate. I think NASA is too. So,
nice.
Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a lot of stuff on TV coming out in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And over at Max Yasker's farm near Woodstock, New York, what happened on August 15th?
I was there.
40 years ago.
Jimmy.
You were not
Jimmy,
there.
Jimmy, Janice.
You were not there.
Oh, I was so there. I was playing backup keys for Janice at the time.
Oh, don't we all wish we could have been there? God, looking back.
I know.
Wow. Now there's
all the love making.
All the love. 3 days, right? 3 days of the rain, right?
How much love making was there really?
I wonder how many babies were born because of Woodstock babies. Huh? We should look that up. You should graph it, Jeff.
Graph it against what? What's the x-axis?
Woodstock 2, maybe.
Yeah, really, really.
So now there's a performance pavilion and a museum that opened last year on the original site. Remember, Hillary Clinton took a lot of slack for that because she was the New York senator who approved funds for Woodstock Museum.
Really?
Remember that?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, people ragged on her because she was like wanting to put a museum at Woodstock. But I think, you know, it's probably
that's appropriate.
It.
Absolutely, it was a big cultural thing that happened at the time.
Right.
You know, it was an anti-war thing. It was a celebration of, and
it
turns
was
1968
out, 1968 was such a.
And it turns out, you look back at all the incredible. Lineup of talent.
Oh my God!
You know,
everybody was
the
a
classic,
who's who.
It's the classic who's who of rock of early rock.
And quite a few of them are still around today.
Yeah,
But it's not going to be much longer. You know.
Right, and some of them sadly died off young.
Yeah, some of them have. But
that would
Woodstock.
Have been neat to
so
see.
I'm sure in August we'll be seeing. Look back specials of that too, because that's pretty remarkable. God, 40 years.
Well, I know.
Well, now that we've dated ourselves, let's talk about something else that I know is near and dear to your heart. We got a big fat problem here in the United States.
A big fat problem. Because we're fat?
Because we is fat, and we is getting fatter.
We talk about that all the time.
We is getting so much fatter.
Getting fatter.
We keep getting fatter, but what's really scary now is the baby boomers are getting fatter. And what that really means is that on the bottom line, that everybody sort of thought, I know this is awful, but people were sort of thinking, that if you're really fat, you're going to die young, right? And so a lot of these baby boomers would die young.
Right.
But what turns out is the opposite is happening because medicine has made so many advances that now fat people are even living longer, but they're living longer with a lot of diseases, which are costing more money.
Yeah.
So that's the implications of this new study. And that we're actually, you're not going to believe this, but they're talking about a national strategy to combat obesity because it's so prevalent now. This
well,
last
it's
study.
It's about time. I mean, we've talked about this issue many times on this show. And
I know.
You know, it's kind of funny to talk about, oh, yeah, I'm putting on a few pounds
fat.
I get older. But it's an epidemic that costs real money and has real effects on people's lives.
A third of Americans are obese. We're not just talking about 5 pounds overweight. We're talking obese.
Right.
And Mississippi continues to lead the nation in all categories. There are really no bright spots in this study. There's national annual obesity ratings. Colorado is at the low end of the list. It ranks 50th.
They're typically one of the thinnest ones. I think they've ranked there before.
Mm-hmm. In 31 states, more than 1 in 4 adults are obese. Mm. Oh, my God.
Wow.
That's 1 out of 4. Obesity
rates. And how would you describe obese? Is obese
isn't it,
pretty darn
isn't
big?
Isn't it like 30 pounds overweight?
Is it?
I thought it was at least 30 pounds.
Yeah.
Obesity rates among adults rose in 23 states over the last years. No state experienced a decline.
Really? See, that's the remarkable
that's
part.
That's what's
we can't
so sad about this.
This sustained.
It is unbelievable. So we've been bracing for a surge in Medicare as the boomers start turning 65, but the new report makes it clear that fat, not just age, will fuel much of the bills that we're going to be paying down the road.
Yeah.
Every state, the rate of obesity is higher among 55 to 64-year-olds than among today's 65 and beyond.
So what are some solutions to this? I mean, it's obviously education to some extent.
Right.
But but people kind of know. I mean, I don't know if education is that much of a problem. People know that chips and soda and McDonald's isn't good for you, but yet they eat it, partially because it's cheap.
With the recession, it's really hard.
Yeah.
People are struggling to pay for nutritious food.
Right.
And did you see the author of Food, Inc.? He was on
I saw him on Jon Stewart.
And he's saying that just our whole system is designed to make us fat.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, because I think it's subsidized. I mean, I think
And Bill Maher has always kind of said that, too.
He has, too. He says you can't buy anything anywhere.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But, you know, try doing all your shopping at Whole Foods or something.
Right.
And it costs a lot of money.
It's a whole paycheck. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Medicare spends anywhere from $1,400 to $6,000 more annually on health care for an obese senior than a non-obese senior.
Wow.
So when you multiply that by, you know, this huge quantity of people who are going to be up there. So
well, remember, there were efforts by, I think I reported this maybe a year or two ago, there were efforts by some companies that are trying to have, you know,
that's
programs within the companies.
Because the employers don't want to be stuck with it.
Well, because they were able to negotiate some group rates with their insurance providers.
Right.
And I thought, well, that's probably something that makes some sense.
Yeah. And if you're wondering where Texas ranks, we come in tied with Georgia at number 14 for adult obesity.
Wow.
And for percentage of overweight children, Texas ranks 20th.
So I wonder if a lot of the states that are fat are south, and does it have something to do with the industrialist nature of, you know, being squirrel-like, where you have to store for the...
Or being poor, or with high rates of... So here they are, for example. These are just... this is the adults. Mississippi, Alabama. This is, you know, worst.
Yeah.
Mississippi, Alabama, West Virginia, Tennessee, South Carolina... And Oklahoma, what the hell is Oklahoma doing?
So if you did a correlation with
Louisiana, they're almost all in the South.
If you did a correlation with per capita income, you might find it very highly correlated.
Right. Maybe it does have to do with education. Mm-hmm. People don't realize
levels,
you can't eat an extra 300 calories a day and not have it come back to haunt you at some point. And then obese children, pretty much it ranks the exact same way. Mississippi, Arkansas, Georgia, Kentucky, Tennessee, Alabama, Louisiana, West Virginia, District of Columbia, you know, so, oh my, that's a shame, but, you know, it's not like we haven't heard it before.
We have to do something.
We do have to do something. Yep.
And I like thinner people anyways, as far as women and dateable.
I know. He's not looking for the obese girls. He's not looking to push the cushion.
So I want a higher percentage.
That's right. That's right. Okay, let's talk about...
I'm just kidding.
Fun employment.
Fun employment. I had a tough week at work today. That says it all.
I'm not sure that's the definition of fun employment.
No, but I'm game for some fun employment. Where, please? Except for that $120,000 job in Queensland on the Barrier Reef.
Okay, well, the new recession dictionary is out. And so because of our economic times, we got a lot of new words in our vocabulary. And you don't probably realize them until they come along and we go, oh, my God, there's new words. and, you know, we just start to hear them all the time. Like green shoots and bailout and TARP and DTARP. They just start to become part of our vocabulary and we don't quite, you know, even think anything about it. Or a dead mall. I didn't realize dead malls are shopping malls that are debilitated by anemic sales and high vacancy rates. But that would be a dead mall.
Well, it makes sense because I've heard that term, and there are a lot of dead malls around.
Right, exactly. So,
especially inner suburban places in around the country.
Right. So, fun employment. Well, back to this one because this one's kind of interesting.
Is this a new term, fun employment?
Oh, yes, it is. It's a period of joblessness that you actually enjoy. Maybe you get to lay out.
That's what you mean.
Wait, how am I saying? Am I saying it wrong?
No, you're saying it right. I just heard it as fun
employment. No, it's all
new
one word
employment. Yeah. Right, I
it's
gotcha.
It's unemployment with an F in front of it.
Gotcha. So exactly what I had last summer. I wasn't really sweating it too much, and I enjoyed the summer.
That's right.
I had luckily I had some money, and
you lay out, you sleep in, you work out, you read up.
I did a lot of stuff. Exactly.
It helps that you have savings, severance, or unemployment check to pay the bills.
Right. Right. Right.
No. Right. So there's been quite a few articles on it.
Hate to make too light of that. I have a good situation, but not everybody does.
It's a happy time in one's life.
Especially when one's feeding their family.
Right, exactly. A condition of a person who takes advantage of being out of a job to have the time of their life. And typically what's interesting about the psychology of it is that it's mainly people in their 20s and 30s right now who are doing it as a backlash against the establishment.
Huh.
Yes. So they're going all over the world.
I'll show you your stinking job thing.
Right. It's an attitude of entitlement and self-centeredness and a backlash against corporate America, the Dilbert syndrome. So
doesn't everybody want to be a Dilbert?
So they're thinking that it's actually suggesting a generational shift that work is not the be-all and end-all. That's kind of interesting. So that's one new trend.
Yeah, until they look for money.
They'll get
same on the same bandwagon as the rest of us.
That's right, because unemployment rates aren't really going down. It's still kind of ugly out there.
No, it's 9.5 now, and most predict 10% by the end of the year. And
right, and some states are hit really hard. There's like 5 states that it's much higher. Between California, which is just a disaster all around with $26 billion deficit.
Yeah.
No money, just, you know, they're in the double digits already.
Yeah.
So then we have other new words in the recession dictionary, and bailout. I mean, everybody just thinks that bailout is a common term, but it actually wasn't used much before last year.
Huh.
Before the first bailout started.
Before they heard my song, Bail Me Out.
That's right. Bail you out, Jeff. Bail you out.
Mm-hmm.
Merriam-Webster named bailout its word of the year last year.
Wow. Again, they listened to my song.
That's right. Okay, and other new words. Well, furlough is back. Furlough used to be about a government or institutional employee. But now it's back, and it's grown more common these days as companies seek to cut employees. It's also followed by the Great Recession, which is the term now since the recession began in December 2007, which is sort of...
So they're calling this the Great Recession?
The Great Recession.
How come it's not a depression? Is there some technical reason?
I was wondering about that. I think depression is even more serious. I think it's...
Okay.
We're not as bad as a depression. Yeah.
Okay.
Wasn't it like 30% unemployment?
Yeah.
I mean, it was outrageously high.
Yeah.
I mean, it was the Dust Bowl. It was
people
really
selling
bad.
Pencils and apples on the street.
Yeah. It was really, really awful. And nobody had... They lost all their savings because there was no FDIC.
Right. There was no safety net.
There was no unemployment insurance.
Yeah.
There was nothing like that.
Yeah.
Green shoots, however, are the upside of it, which is budding plants now used to describe new indicators of economic recovery. That's a green shoot.
What's a good example
like
of one
Ben Bernanke referred in an interview that improvements in money market mutual funds and business lending were green shoots.
So
he was starting to see small signs of life, small signs of it turning around.
Hmm.
Minnie Madoff is a new noun that's entered our vocabulary.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, did you know that Bernie got sentenced to 150 years?
Yeah. Okay. And I don't think, from all the comments I read, I didn't see anybody saying that was too much.
Yeah, I know.
You know?
Yeah. So a Minnie Madoff is a scammer who perpetuates a pyramid scheme similar to but smaller than Bernie's. That's a Minnie Madoff.
I mean, anything's going to be smaller. He had one of the biggest ever.
That was the biggest ever. Yeah. He's actually going to go down in the book, you know, bigger than Charles Ponzi. You know?
Wow. So are they going to start calling it not Ponzi schemes anymore?
Yeah, it's probably going to be Madoff schemes.
Madoff schemes.
That's right. So how about a recessionista? Have you met any of those while you're out there?
No. What is a recessionista?
She is someone who remains stylish during times of economic hardship by updating her wardrobe in a frugal manner. I love that.
In a frugal manner.
I'm a recessionista.
Nice.
Designer trends at discounted prices.
Places like TJ Maxx and Marshalls and
falling stock and rising gas bills get in the way of a cute wardrobe.
And why should you?
That's right. Oh, here's another employer term: a RIF. Have you been riffed? It's an abbreviation for reduction in force.
Yeah.
It could also be riffed or riffing.
I mean, I've heard back in Sabre days, back in. Late 90s.
Were you riffed then?
I wasn't, but people got riffed.
Uh-huh.
So that one's not particularly new. Yeah.
Right. How about Shovel Ready? That one is new.
Shovel Ready. That's because of Barack Obama's stimulus.
Right.
This project is
Shovel Ready. Shovel Ready. It means give them the ballers and, you know, be ready. But yeah. I don't know if you've heard the backlash, but quite a few of those Shovel Ready projects were projects that are going nowhere and are completely unnecessary.
Well, I'm not surprised.
Republican senator put out a list and, you know, he named like the 10 biggest, and there are some really stupid ones. You know, like some little airport that nobody's ever going to fly into.
The problem is, you know, you want to get these things done fast.
Right.
To help move the economy.
Right.
And you can't just go through this process that fast.
Right.
And so sadly, it doesn't surprise me.
Right.
But I don't know. I mean, couldn't they do a better job of not building an airport that's not going to be used for anybody?
Right. Nobody's going to land there ever.
Yeah. It's probably politics. You know, everybody's guarding their projects and stuff. But
You'd think it would have been vetted a little bit more.
Yeah.
But I think some people were critical of how fast it was rushed through.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
People
yeah.
got it at 3 a.m. and they had to vote on it the next morning
yeah.
and nobody even read how big it was.
Right. Right. Probably true.
Okay. A couple more words. Staycation. That is a big word.
Oh, yeah, staycation. We talked about that one before.
Staycation. We're all staycationing.
You built your fence for
That's
your
right.
staycation
my,
last
my
year.
That's right. My fence was my staycation. And how about a zombie bank? I didn't realize there were zombie banks.
I didn't realize that either.
Like, I heard at last count, like 52 banks have been closed this year by the FDIC. And you just don't even know what happens. It happens on a Friday, and then they're open again on Monday.
I saw a fascinating This American Life. The whole hour episode was about how that process works. And it's very impressive. Very professional, very well, thorough. They have teams that know exactly what they're doing, how to get into the books, and how to. Really impressive.
Mm-hmm.
They have a whole communication plan of how they communicate.
How they let people know?
How they let people. It's just down to a.
Isn't that interesting that we can do something as quickly as close a bank, yet we can't take a lot of money and put it where it's needed to help people get back to work?
Well, I think, the answer is yes. The thing about the bank closure, it's a repeatable process.
Right. You can do it again and again.
And there's experts that have done that repeatable process, and they keep on doing it. But getting large shovel-ready projects together was a one-time thing, so it's going to be a lot harder by nature.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, a zombie bank is a bank that has negative net worth but continues to operate because of depositors' insurance or other government intervention.
Oh, really?
So there you go. Oh, and one more word.
I always like to see zombies in the news.
That's right. And here's one more word.
But quit talking about Michael Jackson. I don't bump.
Okay, this is a good word that I'm sure it applies to all you folks with iPhones, and I don't have one, so I'm not necessarily this word, but have you heard the term app-noxious?
No, but I know what it means.
You know exactly what it means,
right? Yeah, there are people at work that, like, you know, we have iPhones.
Okay, give me an example.
Okay, this is what I think it might be. There are people at my work. I'm not obnoxious, if it's the definition I'm thinking.
Okay.
That will come up to me and show me their latest, coolest app.
They just show you?
Like,
they don't actually
use
it on you?
Like I really care. What do you mean, use it on me? I mean,
for
some
example,
apps,
have they ever come up to you while you're eating a burrito and looked up the calorie counter and told you that burrito has 550 calories?
Oh, no, that's
obnoxious. That is obnoxious.
That's funny. What's another example?
Okay, I'll give you another
example. That would just be kind of rude.
Isn't it?
But funny.
Okay, or if you're all sitting around at a restaurant with a group of friends and you're talking about Ralph Macchio being in a movie and somebody gets out their internet movie database website and they check to see, was he in it or were you wrong? And they say, you were wrong, he wasn't in it.
Oh, God.
See?
So now I've used it to to further the discussion, because like, oh, what other movie was he in with Jessica Lange?
Right, so you
Lange,
weren't really being obnoxious.
But not obnoxious,
okay.
No.
All right. Okay, so I had an example. On Sunday night, I went out on a date, and somehow we talked about, I said I used to live in New York, and we were talking about fireworks, and I said I watched the Macy's fireworks last night on TV, and the orchestra was playing on the Intrepid.
Okay.
And the date said, are you sure it was the Intrepid? That was the submarine that was sunk during World War II and 1,200 people died. And I said, no, I thought it was the Intrepid because I've been on it before and I really did think it was the Intrepid.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, maybe it's not. Maybe it's something else.
Right.
And so
this is casual conversation here.
He whips out his iPhone to prove me wrong.
Wow.
And it turns out it was the Indianapolis that was sunk, the USS Indianapolis.
So you were right. He was wrong.
Sunk after 1945 and 1,200 people.
I think it'd be awful to be obnoxious, and then lose.
That's right. I could have said, punked, you're wrong. You were wrong, bud. You brought out your iPhone to prove.
So now, how did you feel about being on a date and obnoxious?
I was actually surprised that he brought out the phone to prove. He actually said when he brought it out, I just am really into facts or something. Yeah. Like, he wasn't trying to, I don't think he was necessarily trying to prove me wrong.
Right.
He just wanted to
he
know
was
the
curious.
Answer.
Yeah, I'm sometimes that way, but I'll,
but would you
if I'm
it?
On a first date, I would never do that.
I mean, that was
especially if I was questioning what she was telling me.
Especially within 10 minutes of meeting someone?
No, no. Well, now, maybe if I thought it was a bad date, but how did you, I mean, how did the date go, if I could be so bold?
Well, he didn't bring out the iPhone again.
Okay.
So I kind of thought maybe it was going well, because the iPhone stayed away.
Okay. And did he bring out anything? Oh, hey-o!
Well, he brought out his wallet and paid for dinner, so there
well,
you
that's
go.
Always a good
that
thing.
That was nice, I know. But that was interesting, but it's certainly changing the way we have conversations, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. I mean, we can just check anything in facts now.
It's knowledge one upsmanship. If you can actually click on a piece of information that applies directly to the moment and point it out, and it's very tempting to do, you have access to a lot of arcane knowledge.
The problem is there's still a delay in doing it. So it takes a conversation out of flow a little bit.
It does. Mm-hmm. It does. Unless you're really just, everybody's dying to think of who was that person, and we really need to know, can somebody look it up?
Right.
You know, so that was kind of interesting. But it is kind of bad in the sense that some people, you know, there's 35,000 apps out there now for the iPhone, and BlackBerries are going to start getting theirs. They actually started in April. And now, I mean, phones can do everything from make fart noises to play poker.
Yeah, that fart app is a great app.
Or what about the one that dings all different sounds of bells? So if you don't like what somebody says, you can either buzz them or ding them.
That would be really obnoxious.
So there was this woman who said her husband began using that when she said something she didn't like.
Oh, my God.
And like, she'll say to him, can you take the trash out? And he would play the gong sound.
All right, that's not the way to foster a good relationship. I'm guessing. I'm not very good at this, obviously,
and
but
another guy,
I'm guessing that's not a very good way to do it.
And another guy talked about his girlfriend, and the first thing she touched when she got out of bed in the morning and the last thing she touched when she went to bed was the phone.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. Is that kind of where we want to be? Is that
No, cool? I think everybody has to, and, you know, I've been accused before of sometimes doing the iPhone a little bit too much, but I think I'm also like Facebook. I was into it, and I'm not so much into it as much anymore. I'm finding it really boring to hear my friends' boring statuses. I don't. If you're listening, I'm sorry. I don't mean that, but you know, I don't care about your dinner, and or what you made, or the bike ride you went on, or it's great for you, but I don't find it compelling. So I don't go to Facebook as much anymore. You know. And I think the same thing may be with keeping connected. I think there are phases. You know, once you get your iPhone, you're always on it. You're just excited. You want to play with it. You want to communicate. I think there should always be some little person in the back of your mind that says, disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I think it's a healthy way to go Saturday morning, and go do something.
Right. Exactly. Like, have you ever gone all weekend and not checked your email? That's actually kind of liberating.
I not recently, but I have done it, and I think it's a great idea. I like it. I probably will do that very soon.
Mm-hmm. It's actually kind of nice to just take a break. Or if you ever go if you go somewhere where they don't have internet connections, and you say you turn your phone off.
Yeah, and I've done that. I've been without. Well, actually, with the iPhone, I guess I'm always connected.
You always have it on.
Come to think of it, yeah. But you know, 95% of the emails that one gets are just not, they're not actionable. They're not even things that you need right away.
Right.
And
I'll just leave you with two more fun facts. Guess what? Rhode Island is changing its name.
Really?
It's thinking about changing its name. Do you know its official name is State of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations?
Oh, I like that better.
I know. That is its formal
RIPP,
name.
RIP.
That's its formal name.
Wow.
But to some people, it conjures up images of slavery.
Yeah, a little bit.
So they're thinking
plantation.
They're thinking about changing their name. And
to what?
Rhode Island.
Oh.
They're thinking about dropping the Providence Plantations.
Like, nobody knew. If they didn't mention it, nobody would even know anyway.
Except those, you know, 100,000 people that live in Rhode Island.
Yeah. Do they really know?
I know. Do they really know? Okay, and here's a question for you. This will be a Trivial Pursuit question. Okay. What is one of the top 20 best-selling car models of all time, having sold 10 million units in a 30-year history?
I'm guessing...
It's not conventional.
Oh, really? I was going to say like Ford Mustang. I'm just thinking of those models that have been around for 30 years, because that even that is just a testament by itself. I'm going with Toyota Corolla or something, but obviously you said it's not conventional.
It's not
Corvette.
Conventional. No. It sold 457,000 units in 2008,
uh-huh.
topping the Toyota Camry and the Honda Accord.
Huh.
In the 1990s, it outsold both the Accord and the Taurus.
Hmm.
And it is made by the Little Tykes Company. It is the Cozy Coupe. Remember the Cozy Coupe?
No.
The plastic cherry red sports car with the little toddlers.
Oh, that little thing.
We'll
look at
that.
We'll
have to put the Cozy Coupe up online.
I'll put that,
so everybody
I'll put that
knows
as
who
picture.
The Cozy Coupe is. It's the classic toy car. It's actually getting inducted into an auto museum
in
Cleveland.
Well, you didn't say toy car.
Well, I know. But it's a
that
car.
That was a trick.
But it's a car for little ones. It actually goes.
And he looks really
by
happy
foot
driving
pedal.
It.
Yeah. Isn't that cute?
That's very nice.
So if somebody ever says, you know, technically it's a car, sort of.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I guess you're not defining an internal combustion engine on the car.
That's right. The first production line was 1979.
Wow.
So there you go.
Wow.
Cozy Coupe.
Are they still made in America?
They are.
Okay.
Go figure. Is that amazing?
So
that
the American
is amazing.
Car industry is doing all right.
That's right. That's right.
We don't need no stinking bailout.
It's made in Hudson, Ohio.
All right.
There you
Very
go.
Very good.
Cozy Coupe.
All well, Gretchen,
then.
You did a great job bringing all the topics.
Jeff is back. Jeff will be back next time.
I'm back in the game, baby. Yeah.
He's back. All right.
Can't keep me down for long.
No.
So thanks, Gretchen.
Sure,
and we're off
everybody.
To get some margaritas, aren't we?
Yeah. Party.
Partay. Okay. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.